Conversations on Woman of Size often have adult themes and language, so if you're listening in mixed company, beware, earmuffs may be needed. What's up, everybody? Hey, you're listening to Woman of Size, and I'm your host, Jana Schmieding. Still out here on Chinook lands, enjoying that August river life, baby. I've been taking a lot of time, you know, really thinking about grind culture and what the hell I'm doing with my comedy career and how in God's name one gets a job in Hollywood. And also how I can, you know, personally fly over the Amazonian land and put out the rainforest fires. You know, all of those really crucial existential questions that keep our collective asses nice and chapped. I'm on the brink of career exhaustion. And you know what? All I really want to do these days is sit around with wonderful people in a commune-type setting while we share our experiences and learn about the human condition as, you know, we slowly become an endangered species. Is that too much to ask? God. My guest on the podcast today is someone I would like to join me in this commune venture because I could talk with her for hours. She's a really thoughtful creator and a comedian, and she has a podcast of her own called Too Sensitive for Comedy. Please enjoy my conversation with the hilarious and the sensitive Crystal Adams. All right, everybody. I'm sitting here with Crystal Adams. Hi, Crystal.
Hi.
Thank you for being on my podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my gosh. This is our first time meeting.
Yes.
But I've listened to your podcast, Too Sensitive for Comedy.
Yeah.
It's very fascinating to me because it's like psychological.
Yeah.
Tell me, before we get into anything, how do you discuss your body with people?
Mm-hmm.
What do you say? How do you identify?
Yeah, I do think about it. The thing that I think is most sad is that my philosophy, or like the way that I try to move about the world, is I would like my body to not be discussed at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would because I mean, and that goes for comedy and that goes for like just interactions with people. And I don't even think this has anything to do with it, but I used to be a lot bigger than I am now.
Mm-hmm.
But even still, when I lost the weight, I'm like, let's not discuss my body. And part of that is like, I mean, it's obviously a choice that I'm making, but I think that we just don't have the way that we know how to talk about our bodies is very pernicious.
Mm-hmm.
Even like the way that people are happy for someone when they've lost weight, I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't like that discussion because you don't know. And people cross boundaries all the time. Strange, you know, people you don't really know, like acquaintances that haven't seen you in a while. And it's like, you're actually crossing a boundary. And we don't, that for whatever reason, you don't feel ashamed about that.
Right.
And it's because we've allowed it. We've allowed people to just say anything about anybody else's body.
Totally.
And we've categorize positive speech about body as like, we're happy that you've lost weight, or you look so good, or you're
hot. We're really celebrating fitness.
Yeah. And I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate it.
I really do too. I mean, hence this whole project. Yeah, it is very pernicious. I love that word, eh? But I agree, like we just don't have developed language about how we're discussing our bodies.
Yeah.
And like, and it is, to me, for the longest time, it was very easy to not talk about it. It was easier. It was less challenging to, like, just be like, let's not even address it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is my thing, and I don't ever want people to say it. But as I have grown fatter and fatter over my time on this earth, and grown into my body, I've noticed that people notice it and that people want to talk about it.
just like you're saying, mm-hmm. without any permission.
Yep.
Just really, really verbal mm-hmm. about how my body is existing in this space.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is.
It's upsetting.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, and I also don't feel like I get to enjoy my body. Like I don't even know what that is. I don't know what that looks like. I see it in some women. I see them celebrating their body, but even celebrating your body in the ways that you see some women doing it, it comes with consequences.
Yes.
And there are consequences that I don't necessarily want to pay.
Yep.
So like the women that are like, you know, thotting it up on Instagram, mm-hmm. like, okay, cool. More power to them. But they have agreed, and maybe in some ways, maybe they don't think they're agreeing to, but they are agreeing to like, the certain types of you know, DMs that they're getting from dudes.
Absolutely.
You know, or comments, and
or from women.
Yeah, women, yeah, totally. And you know, they and I hope that it, you know, them taking power and taking things back like eventually shifts it so that it's like more women feel okay and there's less people interacting with it in a bad way. But I just personally, I can't handle.
You don't want to put yourself on that line.
Yeah.
No, I get it. Listen, I don't either. But I really appreciate the women who are doing that.
Totally.
Because it is moving the needle.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
Yeah, I
like,
agree.
We're seeing more fat people on the socials. Mm-hmm. Like, it is a conversation that we're starting to have. We're seeing a little bit more fat representation, I think, in television and film. Mm-hmm. Albeit mostly white, which annoys the shit out of me. But mm-hmm. I think that, like, I don't know. There's just something about taking an opportunity. People who are taking this opportunity to be like, here I am.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a swimming suit.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Absolutely.
I wear swimming suits too.
Like, I love, that's why I love Nicole Byer.
Totally.
That's, I mean, that, I love that about her.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I mean, who knows for real, but I mean, you know, I listen to a lot of interviews with her and she genuinely seems to not be fazed by the negative attention that she gets, or she turns it into something, you know, like
yeah.
she turns it into a joke, or she like calls that person on their bullshit, which
right.
I'm like, great. We need people like that, that can like stand up to the nonsense
yeah.
that comes your way when you do put yourself out there and decide I'm going to love my body publicly.
Totally. I think that like the act of using comedy as a means of having a discussion, like as a vehicle for mm-hmm. some of this discussion, this discussion about bodies and fatness and diet culture and wellness, it's really heavy, mm-hmm. like pun intended, but it is heavy content.
Yeah.
It's hard for us as a culture to stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And I love women in comedy who are using that as a means to using their comedy to be like, hey,
yeah,
we're not past it. Like, let's joke about it.
Like, and also people telling them that they're beautiful and they're like, wait, I knew that.
Yeah, totally.
That's another one where it's like, oh, you just revealed yourself. Like,
yeah.
oh, you're beautiful for a
wait,
fat
actually,
person.
You no. are beautiful.
Like, what? No, not, and not even, and that's, it's interesting because I see some of the same language as it relates to race. So like, you know,
mm-hmm.
some people were like, oh, you're beautiful for a black girl.
Right.
You know, like, and that's never been sent to me, thank God. But it's so crazy.
It is. I mean, we start to see, like, this is what I'm discovering through talking to so many different people, is that we're starting to see that it's all coming from the same place,
yeah.
right? Like, this understanding of beauty mm-hmm. and the beauty ideals, they're all coming from the same origin,
yeah.
right? And, like, they all have, like, ties to white supremacy
mm-hmm.
and ties to masculinity.
That's
and
so
like, it's like when we're looking at these things through like the male lens,
mm-hmm.
like, of course they're going to like link the oppression of black people
yeah.
to the oppression of fat people.
Yeah.
It's like fucking insane to
yeah.
me.
It, yeah.
The network that I'm hosted on, Hoo Ha Ha, posted it was Anti-Diet Riot Club. I did like an Instagram takeover, which I've never done
uh-huh.
and was so nervous. But then they posted a picture of me on their feed. And it was a picture from, I took like these sexy pictures, which I would never do, but I did it. And yeah. I wrote a little article about it. It's the picture that they posted on Anti-Diet Riot Club is like me in like a kind of a teddy, but it's like not my full body. Like I chose the picture that they were going to post, but this is so, it's so funny that this happened on Anti-Diet Riot Club's specific feed, but like posted the picture. There's a caption like, here's who this woman is. And the first comment is a white woman who wrote, yikes.
Wow. How original.
Yikes. Just yikes. I was like, yikes. Bitch, you're on Anti-Diet Riot Club's page. What are you doing?
What the
heck? Like, this feed is just riddled with beautiful fat women. Yeah. Like, images of them
did
in
you,
lingerie.
Did you look to see if she, like, had... That's just
her go-to. I went to her page.
No, but, like, did you look to see other people's photos to see if that's just what she does on
I don't,
that page?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
She's just like, yikes. She's yikes, like copies yikes, and paste it.
Yikes. Good bet.
Yikes. She has it on her calendar. iCal. At least 10 yikes posts.
Yeah. So. Oof. Like check it off in her yikes spreadsheet. I hit up 10 yikes today on fat women's content. Woo!
I don't know why I always assume hateful people are organized. Like
I know. I know, because it seems strategic.
Yeah,
it fucking seems strategic. Like hate is strategic sometimes, but like, yeah, true. But it is risky to put your body out there. I mean, it's just, you're just gonna get a lot of pushback.
Yeah, I recently, so my boyfriend works in comics, and he. So I went to my first, well, on Facebook, I said, I'm going to my first escape room. I mean, Comic-Con. So I did. I went to my first Comic-Con earlier this year. And it actually was really great. Like, it was in Arizona. And I think what struck me was, oh, these are just like normal, sweet people. You know, I'm sure there's like... But it's like it was proportionate. I felt like the proportion of, you know, weird to normal people is the same as regular society. And they were all there, you know? And so it was really cool to see that. And then also just see people in cosplay.
Yeah.
Like in all different kinds of cosplay. And I guess it started to begin just slightly normalizing it for me.
Yeah.
And so... It just got like, I think it was starting to turn over in my head, like, oh, what if I did some cosplay? Like, maybe, like, could I dip my toe in it? And so I just happened to be looking at something. Oh, I think, oh, because there's an Instagram account. I'll plug them too, because they're great. It's a Cosplay of Color.
Oh, yeah. I think I know about Cosplay of Color, but like, yes.
They're dope. Because most of the cosplay I was looking at or just finding randomly was just, it was all white cosplayers.
Right.
White or Asian.
Right.
Which is fine. Okay. Yeah. But, the Cosplay of Color was really cool. And so, I just, every now and then I would look at that feed and I found, somebody doing a character called, Black Canary.
Ooh.
Yeah. And she was just like really badass, really sexy. And I was like, I looked at the outfit and I was like, I have all of those things in my wardrobe right now. And so I was like, I think I'm gonna do it.
Oh my God. Have you done it?
I did. So I did. I dressed up and I held like a mini. I figured out a while back when I needed to how to do like mini self photo shoots. And so I did. Did it in my house, edited the photos, and then I like put them up, a few of them on Instagram. And honestly, it's the first time that I felt comfortable showcasing any part of my body that was not my face.
Interesting.
Truly.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I had
distance.
Because
you're in a role.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're a character. You're not yourself.
And so on the one hand, it like, I'm glad that I can express it. It is a little sad for me, and I think it will always be sad for me that it's like, oh, I have to be this other person in order to feel like I can celebrate my body publicly. But I, you know, I enjoyed it.
I mean, whatever's safe.
Yeah.
Honestly. So interesting. Mm-hmm. Crystal, how did you get into comedy? Mm-hmm. How did that progression happen?
Yeah, it's good that you're asking now because I was actually just writing about this. I was taking improv classes. I started doing like acting, and I was doing dance before that. And I think I started improv because I was like, I don't know what is driving my heart towards the arts. I just know I've always been a part of the arts.
Yeah.
But I don't know what my niche is.
Mm-hmm,
And I don't know what's, cause it here, and here's the thing is like comparison is not always bad. Like, mm-hmm. and what I mean by that is, I was comparing myself as I was pursuing acting to other people in terms of like, oh, this person seems to have a lot of motivation to you know, to go out for these auditions and to get that and mm-hmm. To work on, you know, line reading at home. Like they right. seem to have all this motivation to do that. I don't seem to have that.
Mm-hmm.
So either it is that I need to try to find a way to get that or I need to try something else.
Yeah, you're almost like comparing yourself. You're comparing yourself to other models or like models of the process as
yeah.
opposed to like this person is so fucking funny and I'm never yeah. going to be funny, you know,
yeah.
like that is dangerous. And I think something that we're used to as people in the performing arts.
Mm-hmm.
But I do that same thing too,
yeah.
where I'm like, I'm watching how somebody else is doing something and I'm wondering if my process is different.
Yeah.
Or if maybe this isn't the thing for me.
Yes.
Or am I learning from them?
Yeah.
How to do it? That's also a great tool.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so I think with acting and with dance, like I liked all those things. And I would say, I would even say that I love them, but I didn't love them enough to like stay motivated if it was not right in front of my face.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And so I did some soul searching and some praying, and I ended up in an improv class. And the improv class was a disaster.
Why?
It's so interesting because I had a friend that came that started doing improv after me, and I was like, I'm not gonna say anything because she's also a Black woman. But I was like, I'm just gonna let her.
I knew it. I was yeah. so scared that this is where it was gonna go,
yeah.
and I knew it.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm just going to let her go to the class and then, you yep. know, she'll have her own experience and then we can talk about it. It may be the same. It may
mm-hmm.
not be, but
mm-hmm.
I will be there to talk with her,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so she had basically my experience, which was that I never felt the thing about improv that obviously is it's not like it's a secret, but the thing about improv that allows you to either be good or to get better and stick with it is you need to be able to let go of your inhibitions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what I feel like sometimes people fail to understand or fail to like consider is the fact that letting go of your inhibitions is something that you can do if you feel safe.
Correct.
It's not something that you, at least for me,
yeah.
I cannot turn it on and turn it off. So if I'm in an environment where I don't feel safe, and I don't mean like I'm afraid of dying. I know you know that, but
right.
I don't want to exaggerate it. But if I don't feel like, you know, I'm going to be heard or listened to, or like if I feel like my idea is so far from what your life
right.
and experience is, or you're throwing out ideas and I'm just like, I'm not catching on to them, or you're talking
right.
really fast and, or just the people in the room,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I don't believe that you are interested in me as a person,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you're
mm-hmm.
just using me as a prop to like launch off your own punchline.
Yeah.
I never got to a point where I was in a room of, you know, these random, they were young, mostly white kids.
Yep.
I never got to a point where I was in the room where I felt comfortable enough to let my inhibitions down and grow.
You know, that is a really great summation of why I think improv has a lot of work to do around race and racism. Yeah, because you're right. Like I often think about this. I went through an improv program myself
mm-hmm.
years and years ago, and I don't trust. I rarely, because I am white coded, in most spaces, I am able to not address my Native identity. And so I can protect myself and not even bring it up in the same way that you don't bring up your body and showcase it. I chose for many years when I was doing improv to never bring it up, only to my closest, nearest and dearest. And a lot of people from my improv community are like, wait, you're Native? You know? And it's like, I want you to understand that for a long time, it just wasn't safe. I don't trust that you can handle this conversation. And what I, my identity, what I might be bringing to this discussion. And the reality is that while a person who is trying to protect themselves or to protect, you know, your inhibition, you don't want to let it go because it's not safe. On the other end of that spectrum, there's a lot of very ignorant people who are practicing this same release of inhibition. And what's under your inhibition?
Yeah. I mean, it just didn't happen a ton, but there were a few times where like I got labeled some very like black, you know, coded name, like, you know, I was just like, what? Okay. All right. You know, and I took three basic classes, three intro class level classes at Groundlings, and I never moved up. Three different teachers, never moved up. So like, that's $1,500 that Groundlings has.
Oh my God. Can I just tell you that I was recently at a Groundlings show recently, like last weekend. This will come out later, but I was recently at a Groundlings show and hashtag Groundlings so white. I'm calling it out. There was one black man in the cast, and this was a high level like class show. The audience was so white. And also, I feel like I counted around five fat jokes that happened in their show. Again, with the, with the language and the ignorance and like, we just don't, what the fuck?
There is one there. So, and part of why I probably stay with it for longer is because there, my favorite improv show, it, it did come through Groundlings, which is, it's called The Black Version. It is, in my opinion, the best. Some people have problems with it. I think it's one of the best comedy shows ever. It's a all black cast. And at the top of the show, they poll the audience for movies, and then they decide on one, and then they do long form improv of the black version of that movie.
Amazing.
It is phenomenal. I've lost my voice laughing almost every single time. It is so wonderful.
I would definitely go to see that show. That sounds amazing.
Exactly. And I think, you know, I probably stayed with it longer because I was like, I want to do that. What they're doing, I would love to do something like that. But truthfully, like, am I ever going to, how many dollars am I going to have to pay before I finally feel comfortable enough to do what they're doing?
So many.
You know?
Because also what they're doing is they're applying intelligence, like a form that is really, really, it requires us to know movies and it requires us to be satirical about race. Which is a skill that is fucking hard to develop.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, sometimes they not a, they won't know the movie and then they really just have to put in its one. Like one time they did Yentl. It was awesome. Girl, that was shit. It was hilarious. I was like, I don't even know this movie, but this is wonderful. This is hilarious. Amazing. What's happening?
All right, we're going to just take a really quick break.
And I think it's such a problem that because people are so afraid of being labeled as racist, and people are afraid to talk about their whiteness because they didn't have to grow up talking about it ever, that they're not, they're unwilling to admit that their race and their culture has an impact on the culture that they've created in these improv places. They want to believe that they They just let it happen. They just planted the seed and it grew without being affected by anything to do with where they came from.
I mean, I feel like some theaters are like, but we brought on some black teachers. And it's also, that is just a hilarious assumption that all people of color know how to address these issues.
Yeah.
The reality is that many are just trying to have the same kind of fortune and fame that that white people are having. Yeah. Like, I just want to practice my creative skill.
Yes.
Like, I don't want to also be like put in a leadership position so that like you can fulfill your diversity quota and so that like all the black people can take my class and I'm opening up space for them. Mm-hmm. Like, no.
Yeah.
That's fucking bullshit.
It is bullshit. And I will tell you, one of my teachers, she was Asian American. And I feel like pretty aware, but I mean, even she, like, you know, just did not have the ability to have this conversation about race, you know? And so she actually like tried, I guess, maybe trying to help me, like refer me to another black person who actually, funnily enough, is in the black version. Mm-hmm. And so like he had a conversation with me, but neither of them were able to acknowledge what I was coming from because they had already had success. When you are successful and you've made it through, you don't see the challenges that other people might face that look like you. Like, I feel like it's a thing that happens to a lot of comics once they get money.
Yeah.
When they get famous, it's like, you don't know what real people are.
Yeah, totally. It's kind of, it's a weird version, like a fancy version of tokenization.
Yes. Yes. And they do it to themselves and they don't, it's a weird, weird thing.
Yeah. It just, to me, speaks to the fact that, like, man, people in white spaces who exist in white spaces, you fucking need to be having conversations about racism. Mm-hmm. Like, do the reading, do the work so that like you're not relying on people of color to constantly educate you.
Yeah.
It's not fucking fair.
It's not fair.
And you're the ones who are a part of mainstream society. You are living and flourishing and thriving in these environments. Like, why not also host challenging discussions about race and racism all the time?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. And also people need to start talking about it with their kids. I was listening to this one news podcast and there was this woman who was like afraid to bring up race with her white son.
Ooh.
And you know, but it came up because something happened in the news and she's like, but he's just so pure right now. And like he has black friends and he doesn't see. And it's just like this black kid, that's his friend, already is having those discussions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just, and I can tell, I can smell it on people, like my white friends that like grew up having a discussion about race or like, you know, being aware of it. I can feel it because I already feel lighter around them.
Yeah, totally.
And so I'm like, yeah, start having that discussion with him now so that he's not afraid to be white.
Totally.
He's not afraid to acknowledge that he is white.
100%. I mean, I have a niece and nephew and they're in preschool and kindergarten. And recently for Columbus Day or whatever the fuck day, it was the teacher had them do dress up like international dress up day. And so it was like little white kids dressing up as Indians and dressing up as Hawaiians and dressing up as Mexican, you know, just the most stereotypical stuff. And that is a very common occurrence. It happened to me when I was in kindergarten and my parents were very adamant about being like, hey, this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
This is not how we do this. Mm-hmm. Like,
and did they say that to the teachers?
God. I was fucking doing these presentations throughout elementary and middle school to every single class I was in. I had to like show my regalia and like traditional dance with my peers. And like, it was a Native American Awareness Day every year at my school. And I grew up in like colonial small town Oregon. Uh-huh. It was very white. like I was taught at a very early age to like challenge that paradigm,
Did that make you feel pride or were you embarrassed by it? Or like, how did you feel when it was happening?
You know, both and all. Mm-hmm. And looking back on it now, I feel more so, you know what I feel is I feel equipped. Mm-hmm. As an adult, I feel equipped.
Okay.
I understand. I know that there are certain people in all of spaces, mostly white spaces, that are snickering mm-hmm. at me mm-hmm. when I have these discussions, mm-hmm. you know, and I have friends still from my small town that are like appreciative of the education, mm-hmm. you know? So like, there's just like people on all range. And as an adolescent, I was like, all right, here we go.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It was wow. just like grin and bear it, you know?
Cause you were the only one.
Yeah. Yeah. My family was definitely mm-hmm. the only one. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that I just, you know, now that I'm a grown up, I feel very equipped mm-hmm. and I'm interested in it. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about race yeah. and racism. Mm-hmm. I think it's fascinating, mm-hmm. you know? And, that I think that like the ability to have those discussions and to like recognize racism and stereotypes and that kind, you know, the understanding of even what code switching is, yeah. you know, it's like, it's a skill. Mm-hmm. It's a leadership skill. Mm-hmm. It's an education. Like it's a great thing to be able to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, you know, cause sometimes I'd wondered like, well, what's the benefit of all this information and this knowledge? But the truth is, there's been there sometimes when you know the word for something, it for me is like it actually gives me peace. Yes. Because it's like okay, there is I don't know why this is an analogy is coming to my mind, but one of the things they say about like the flavor in Cheetos and Doritos, it's like they make it evocative of a flavor that you know, but your brain doesn't fully know what it is. That's why uh-huh. it's addictive. Uh-huh. Is that your brain is like, what is this? What is this? Yeah.
Really like constantly searching.
Yes, exactly.
What?
And so your mind isn't like, your mind is just curious. And so that's why you keep eating them. Yeah. Like that.
Whoa.
That, yeah. So that all that flavor.
I mean, I do keep eating them. What's the flavor called? I don't ever want to stop eating them. However.
Yeah, they're tasty. They're delicious. But your brain can't fully like place what it is. And so that's why you keep eating them. And so I think I feel that way about like just things that I'm like, I don't know why I have this feeling when I'm right. around this group or when I'm in this environment or this thing that's happening in society. And then when I have somebody says a word and like, it's this. And yeah. I'm like, yep. Oh, like my brain can be at peace.
100%. That is, I think, what is now happening around fatness. Mm-hmm. It's yeah, like, hey, that. This is called fat phobia. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. once like we can label it mm-hmm. just in the same way that we're like, this is an example of racism. Mm-hmm. It's not problematic mm-hmm. or whatever weird coded word we're going to use for it. It's racism. Yes. Let's label it.
Yeah.
So that people can now walk through the world and be like, oh, no, that's not great.
Totally. Exactly.
And I feel so, I actually feel like every time I say the word fat in reference to my body, I feel better about it. Mm-hmm. Every single time that I use that word as a simple descriptor, I'm like, ah,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to keep saying curvy or fucking whatever word that is. It's very sexy. And that's not how I feel about my body, you know, or like thick, you know, I'm like, that seems like I'm appropriating somebody else's word. Mm-hmm. I don't want to necessarily use that all the time. I also don't want to use the word chubby. Mm-hmm. It's kind of too cute, but like,
yeah,
there's some times that I want to use chubby, yeah. you know, it's like, I want to be able to use the word fat.
Yeah.
I don't want it to have so much stigma mm-hmm. around it. Mm-hmm. And when we load, I think when we don't use words as their original meaning, mm-hmm. sometimes it just like, it just fucks us up, mm-hmm. About how we can and cannot describe ourselves or a situation or like something that is perhaps tense.
Yeah. Which is why I don't like discussions about body at all. It's like, mm-hmm. if I feel like I have gained a little weight, I'm not going to talk about that to anybody.
Like, oh, yeah. None of your business.
For me, I'm like, I try to, I have so many good things in my life. There's so many other things that my emotions need energy for besides this. And I worked really hard. My main goal with like anything that I did with food or my body was I want to minimize the amount that I think about this.
Absolutely.
Because I think that's the worst thing about like living in this culture when you are bigger is that it makes that take up so much of your brain energy mm-hmm. that you could be giving to loving other people yeah. and loving yourself yeah. and like projects that you're interested mm-hmm. in, things that you want to learn. Like mm-hmm. I want to spend as little amount of my time thinking about this as possible.
That is I feel like our entire culture is like based on that. It's yep. like trying really hard to control our food.
And it's so rude because I just feel like women are awesome. They have great ideas. I'm yeah. like, how many ideas are we losing?
Because listen, we would have cured cancer.
You
by
know,
now.
We truly, yeah. That's facts.
We gotta fucking stop talking yeah. about food as our only conversation.
I cannot
topic.
Stand it. I my dad dated a woman who got the lap band. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and on truly, like the lap band is not the. It was not. It didn't make this problem happen. What I'm about to say, mm-hmm. but it exacerbated it.
I'm sure.
Which is that she became like hyper focused on food to the point of that was her only that was her only discussion. The only thing she could talk about was how much she ate, how little she could eat now, you know, how she made this the other day or she's, you know, trying to, and I'm like, good God, woman.
Yeah.
You need to get some interest.
Get a hobby.
Yeah.
For the sake of all of us, please.
I could not stand it. She's gone now, thank God.
Bye. Ultimately, what it comes down to is you are TMIing this information about your choices mm-hmm. so that the moral high ground is established.
Yeah.
And then I need to, for some reason, suddenly evaluate my choices yeah. and what I'm doing with my fucking eating. And I'm yeah. like, I don't fucking care, man. Mm-hmm. I just had, for dinner last night, I slathered some butter on an entire loaf of French bread.
Nice.
And I just chowed down. Like, I had a big breakfast. I didn't need a whole meal. And I don't care. Yeah.
I'm also, I don't know. I know I'm... nobody's gonna agree with me on this, but I feel like we know too fucking much about our food. Like yeah. people are always like, oh, you need to know what's going in your body. It's like, we know too much.
We do.
I'm like, I know the calories of everything. Like
yeah.
that's annoying.
It really
it's
is.
Upsetting.
It is. It's a method of control. It's yeah. like we gotta see it for what it is. Like expose the lie, man. It to me it's just like we're obsessed mm-hmm. as a culture. We're obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. And the unfortunate reality is that all of this, even the food that we have access to is like totally yeah. colonized.
Oh, yeah.
You
yeah.
know? What's going on these days for you in the comedy world? Are you performing a lot? Are you kind of on a chill time? What's happening?
Yeah, so I am trying to, as Sierra says, level up. That takes, as Rihanna says, work, 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 work. And
I mean, everybody's talking about it. Yeah, yeah.
So I really am trying to get to a place where I am... I think my ultimate goal is like I would like one of the things that I'm doing to provide consistent income. Mm-hmm. And I know it may take longer for the stand-up part to mm-hmm. happen. So I'm like doing some other things to like possibly create a more steady revenue stream or at least a connection to something that's giving me consistent jobs.
Totally.
So I'm trying to work on that, which means that I am not submitting for a bunch of stuff right now, but I am... still performing a lot. Mm-hmm. Like I probably have around 3 shows a week.
Oh my God. That's a lot to me. That's a lot. I know to some that's not as much, but to me, I'm a good, I like a one, I like yeah. a one a week
a
gig.
One a week, yeah.
That's kind of,
I mean, it's ebbs and flows. Like recently you just like flared. Because sometimes it happens when people like, I think there's like a psychological thing of like, when you see people's name, then you remember them next time you're booking things. Mm-hmm. So I think like I'm on a upswing of like, oh, a few people have seen my name on mm-hmm. some good shows. So like I'm booking more shows. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't want to downplay my talent. I just think that is a thing that's at play. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Because recently it has been more. Like, I think for a while it was like around one or two shows mm-hmm. a week, which is great. But when it's more shows, I notice that like I get a little lazy because I'm like, oh, I'm not. I believe that going to open mics is a muscle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The going is a muscle. Mm-hmm. The being able to enjoy it is a muscle.
Yes.
Because yes. The thing is that like it opened my, and I just now rebuilt that muscle because at the end of last year, I taped a 10-minute set. So I wasn't going to open mics. I was trying to do a bunch of shows in front of real people so that I could like get the experience of like, okay, this is how this stuff works in front of a real audience. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't going to open mic. So I actually, that muscle atrophied a bit. And so I was getting back into it and I was like, I hate this going back to open mics. So I was like, why do I do this? And then I just now settled back into like, oh no, I like mm-hmm, it again. Mm-hmm. And I recommend that piece of advice to people is to, if you want to do comedy, try to build up a muscle that actually allows you to enjoy open mics.
Totally.
Because that, if you're avoiding open mics, you're avoiding the thing that's going to help you.
Yeah. You're avoiding rehearsing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally.
And it makes it easier to avoid if you hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very easy to hate.
They're very easy. Open mics at all.
Yeah.
One of the things that I don't like about open mics, though, is that I don't feel like they're, well, the ones that I've been to, mm-hmm. I'm not getting any laughs either way. Mm-hmm. So I don't actually know mm-hmm. what's hitting and what's not.
Yeah.
You know what I want?
What?
I want a group uh-huh. of trusted female comedians uh-huh. to come to my home uh-huh. and we do our sets for each other uh-huh. and actually give each other notes
uh-huh.
and like help each and like laugh at the jokes. Uh-huh. Like it's a rule that you have to laugh. If something's funny, you just force it out.
Uh-huh. There's a woman that does that. It's called the Clitorati.
Oh, I've heard of the Clitorati.
Yeah. I think Jules, she runs one of them. She might have started another one. I don't know. I don't know why I'm blanking on her last name. Jules, I'll look it up later and you can,
mm-hmm. I'll put
but
it up.
She, and then there's a few, all women open mics.
Mm-hmm.
Flappers has one now.
Oh.
It's every Thursday at 6:00. So it's only women can perform, but there's some other people in the audience sometimes. And then Bobby Oliver has one that's an all-female open mic. And so it's just women in the room, women identifying mm-hmm. in the room, and women performing.
I've been to that one.
Yeah.
And I liked it.
So when I first started, I used to go to that one a lot. I would start off with that one in the week. So mm-hmm. I would try out new stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I got something, a big reaction, mm-hmm. I would like, okay, I think that can work. And then I would try it at other open mics.
Mm-hmm.
But part of what I realized over time is like some of the liking of open mics has to do with I have more friends in comedy now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I didn't think I was going to. Like in the beginning, I was like, who are these people?
Yeah.
I don't know if I like you. You don't know if you like me.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually just writing about this. Like one of the hardest things, especially when you are other in some way, you don't know when you're first doing open mics, you're like, are they laughing because it's not funny? Or are they not laughing because they don't like me
mm-hmm.
or they are not interested in hearing the story of a woman or right. hearing the story of a Black woman? You don't mm-hmm. know what that thing is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because you have all these different possible reasons,
right.
it's really hard to not become obsessed with that.
Totally. Totally.
And so I would never tell somebody to get over it because it's like, that's going to play a role in yeah, like
forever.
But what I found that worked for me was especially like I'm a highly sensitive person, which is why I have a podcast about it. I think about it a lot, but I realize over time, like once I stopped blacking out on stage, which I did for like a first year and a half. Like just I would, like, yeah, like my mind couldn't handle all the input. So literally like I would, and I would have to rehearse. I would have to memorize what I was going to say. Cause if I, that was the only way I, it happened.
Right, right, right.
And so I go on stage, I black out. I would not be present for what was happening. And then I would get off stage. Oh,
this is so sad, but also so funny. Oh my God.
And then I would get off stage and I would go in my car and cry.
Oh my God.
I would like pull it together and then I would listen and I was like, oh, somebody, I got laughs. Oh, hey.
Hey.
Okay. All right. All right, little Crystal. You doing all right? You're not great, but you doing all right? And so that, but, and I really think it was like, it was like a fight or fight function.
Yeah.
And
totally.
So it was just like my brain protecting me from the moment of like, oh, so much going on. So once I stopped blacking out, started getting a little bit more comfortable, then I started to realize, no, I'm actually capable of being aware of what's going on in the room. And what was happening was I wasn't trusting that I knew what was going on in the room.
Yeah.
And I wasn't trusting that I could say something about it.
Right, right, right. You have to be able to get to know your audience in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, and you having confidence about what, because you could be wrong, right? You could be like, oh, you guys are all, you know, tired from all that traffic because it was raining, you know?
Right, right.
You could be wrong, but like you still could get a laugh for saying something interesting or like, you know, off the cuff about it.
Totally.
Because people just relate to that in general. You know, but I was holding back and even like, you know, saying something about what was going on in the room. But the truth was I was right more often than not.
Totally. Totally.
And I just didn't yet have the confidence to like be able to trust myself to say something about it.
Yeah. To and address I, them.
Yeah.
And be like, I'm looking in your eyes.
And you don't see like, okay, you know how many montages there are in movies? Like there's a bajillion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you often see like the trajectory of somebody not being very good to them becoming good.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the process that it takes. You don't see that in comedy.
Right. No.
You don't, you're not watching, like, it's not a common experience that the average person has that they watch somebody go from like being really bad to being really good.
Totally.
So when you're starting out and you're not good, it almost feels like maybe it's not possible to become good.
Right.
Because I haven't seen it.
Totally.
I've just seen people that are bad and I see people that are good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like that. I don't see the trajectory.
Yeah, totally. You don't see the process.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hidden on purpose.
That's totally true. And I most environments in comedy are male dominated.
Yep.
And, you know, and that's probably not going to change for a while.
Yeah.
And but it is a real thing to think about, like, OK, how can I create you know, environments to get good. Because the thing is that, and there's a lot of people that would like poo-poo it, you know, like creating safe space of like, you got to go out. And I'm like, no, the truth is that you think that you went to an uncomfortable space. You're recommending that I go out to the same uncomfortable space that you went to.
Right.
But the truth is this space was actually kind of comfortable for
right,
you.
Right, right, right.
If we're being real honest,
yeah, totally.
This is your safe space.
Yeah, yeah.
You want me to come to your safe space and pretend that I feel safe.
Exactly.
That's what you want.
Exactly.
And I'm like not gonna be gaslit by that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a lie.
Yeah.
So what is a real thing, and I do recommend is like people, you know, create your safe space. Do not ultimately avoid. You know, I mean, I mean, do what's right for you.
Sure.
But like, I think it helped me to like eventually go into those spaces that felt scarier and then like kill it.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just the recognition. I think most people who get into comedy recognize like, oh, yeah, this is pretty toxic. Just generally the culture.
And people think when, I think a lot of guys think when we call that out that we think it's malicious, and it's not. I don't necessarily believe that.
No, I think it's inherent when they start the space and are dominating passive. Yeah, it is. It's like a passive participation, almost like a complicity. But I do think that for younger comedians to know, like, just know that that's the reality. And those are the things that you're going to be working with. I mean, really, everywhere, that's really the thing you're going to be working with.
Yep.
Unfortunately, this is the world. But if you want to have a hand in making an impact in that kind of way, learning how to navigate that is a great way. Yeah. And also, again, comedy is a great way to address it because it's non-threatening. It's light and funny, and it makes people think.
Yeah.
God. I mean, aren't we amazing? We're saving the world. Crystal, where can people find you and follow you and, you know, share your work?
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram and Twitter at The Dark Crystal.
One of my favorite movies.
Yes. And I have a website. It's crystaladams.com. And I have a podcast, Too Sensitive for Comedy, which is on all the things.
Great. Everybody check out Too Sensitive for Comedy. Book Crystal. She's trying to do a 3 to 4 show a week situation. Yes. So let's book her. Crystal, thank you so much for being on my pod today.
Thank you for having me.
Want to know more about this week's guest? Go to womanofsize.com and you can read extended show notes and links based on this week's topics of conversation. While you're there, sign up for the Woman of Size newsletter and you'll get a monthly email with exclusive written and video content from your girl, Jana. If you're enjoying this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review in Apple Podcasts and tell a friend. I hope to see you here next week. And until then, be big, baby.
This has been a Hoo Ha Ha podcast.